This tape is the private and confidential property of Chrissy McLean, 22, Larnish, Loss, a 21-year-old student at Glasgow University. It is a record of a conversation which she had with Angus MacLeod, a senior citizen from Loss, on 23rd February 1996. It is the first of a series of interviews with local people in her research for material for the thesis she's about to write on the subject of local history. She wishes to speak to as many local people as are willing to cooperate with her, and she believes all elderly people has much to contribute, if only by reason of their age and the fact that they have seen many changes during their lifetime. Also, they will have heard the previous generation discussing many aspects of local history that is in danger of being lost forever. I wish to say that it is a great pleasure for me to talk with Chrissy and any other young person who take an interest in our valuable heritage and history. I do hope she will receive the cooperation of all local people, because I believe all local people has much more to contribute than they themselves believe. The older ladies could tell her about their experiences at the herring fishing and in the big houses in Glasgow, etc. Likewise, the older men could tell her about their experience of the herring fishing and the merchant navy, and perhaps their war experiences. The older folk are also valuable sources of information for place names and many other aspects of our local history. We began our discussion by asking Chrissy what subjects she was particularly interested in. And among the subjects she mentioned was, 1, the early history of Loss; 2, place names; 3, taxmen and runrig land tenure; 4, land ownership; 5, crofting and tenure; 6, kelping; 7, fishing; 8, religion; 9, the Caelia; 10, social changes we have seen. Before we could stop Chrissy, she had given us the above 10 headings, which makes a comprehensive beginning, and more could be added to the list. Surely, therefore, we can all comment on one or more of these subjects. Before I come to the substance of the discussion, I would like to address a few remarks to Chrissy herself in order to clarify your mutual positions. Both I and anyone else that Chrissy interviews must recognize that Chrissy is the sole arbiter of what she accepts or rejects from the interview she has with us. This is her thesis, and she will write it in her own words. I see my function as trying to stimulate her mind by passing on to her any information I happen to have come upon in my long lifetime. Chrissy is under no obligation to reflect my convictions or my line of thinking in her writing. I will, of course, do my best to quote sources or alternatively indicate that the source is local tradition, be a Waddish. I am not sure if Chrissy made up her mind about the scope or geographical area she wishes to cover with her thesis, but probably the parish of Loss and Ronish in particular. To begin with, I suppose we should comment on the first of the 10 points, that is, the early history. Church history and ancient monuments and place names are some sources of early history. The crafting village of Rhornish itself is said to be a very old habitation. And I am not very familiar with the history of this village, but we could offer general comments, which is designed to stimulate Chrissy to fuller research before she writes. I have not studied the very early history of Lewis, but I am under the impression that the Picts were here very early. And then the Celts, some writers maintain that they were both Celts, but I leave these things to Chrissy and come to St. Columba, who is sometimes known as the Apostle of the Western Highlands. Columbus was born in Ireland in 521 AD. He landed in Iona in 563, at the age of 42 years, where he began his life's work of evangelizing Scotland. In time, his followers penetrated through to St. Colum Island in Lough Erisod. I don't think the date is known, but I leave that to Chrissy. It might not be unreasonable to guess that a branch of the Celtic Church functioned in St. Colum Island, Lough Erisod, perhaps 1,200 years ago. It is said that the influence of the Celtic Church penetrated to Applecross on the Minch coast, perhaps about 800 AD, and spread to Lewis about the same time. I'll leave it to Chrissy to check on these dates. The ruins of the church and graveyard in St. Colum Island is still to be seen, and we only mention St. Colum Island here to show that there were people in the area at that distant time. Reverend Robert Finlayson, the author of the second statistical account about 1833, speaks about a ruin of a place of worship in Ilanchalanchile, which was erected, he says, in the days of Macmeat Verochy, the Seaforth factor. That would be sometime after 1610. Obviously, the good reverend was misinformed here. Probably Macmeat Verochy repaired the church that was there. Obviously, there was a church there before then. Leaving aside St. Colum Island, Lough Erisod, and touching on place names. As early as 800 AD, the Vikings, who were the ancestors of the modern Norwegians, Swedes and Danes, migrated to the Orkneys, Shetlands and the Hebrides, etc. And for nearly three centuries, the 9th, 10th and 11th, they ravaged the coasts of Europe. 800 years later, that is just now, the prevalence of Norse influence in Lewis' place names is quite remarkable. Husbost, Crossbost, ending with Bost, indicating Norse farmsteads. Now, of course, that's what Bost means. Also, Rhornish and Grimshidder. But I'm not going to attempt to translate the meaning of all these names. Nish, N-I-S-H, or Ness, in Rhornish, I'm told means headland in Norse. Hashetarvo and Hashetarvik, being features of the landscape between Crossbost and Rhornish, are obviously Norse names, as well as Krongelgenish and I am not sure if it's Helgenish, they call that the old burial ground and an old temple situated on Croft 35 Rhanish, which is above the adjoining crofts at the east end of Crosspost, between Rhanish and Crosspost. I'm told very little of the temple is left now. Probably the stones were used by the crofters to build their homes. Strangely, but there is very little reliable information available about this old temple, and we can only speculate on the basis of the available information. For my own self, I had never heard about this temple or burial ground until recently. Some local people speculate that this ancient temple in Rhanish was dedicated to St. Peter. The circumstantial evidence is that there is a stream nearby towards Grimshuddar which is known as Ald Fedder, St. Peter's Stream. Also, there is Addi and Huckard, the priest's Sheely. And the tradition that the priests put fish, grey mullet, on Loch Oranse, previously known as Loch Behi Peaceful, at one time. There is also a tradition of an orchard in the area. And perhaps Chrissy could investigate more about these things. Martin, the gentleman who wrote a description of the Western Isles in 1695, gave a list of 25 pre-Reformation churches in Lewes. He stated that two of these churches were in Lochs, St. Columbkill in the island of that name, in Loch Erison, and St. Farrar of Caerness, Pharear, at Caerness, Caerness. Subsequent writers are puzzled as to the exact location of the second church, and some of them suggest Swordle near Cowes, where the first post-Reformation Presbyterian church was erected in 1724. I venture to say that the case for Swordle is much less convincing than that for the Rhanish site. Now, take for instance the old spelling for Rhanish, R-A-E-R-N-I-S-H. And if the first letter R is replaced by K, we have more or less the same spelling as Martin gives for St. Farrar, Freer. Also, for the church at Rhanish, I mean. Also, St. Farrar is very close to St. Peter, or Nuf Petter in Gaelic speech. Say St. Farrar, Petter. The spellings of these two words, Farrar, St. Farrar, and Nuf Petter is very close. And I'll leave that again to Chrissy to think about it. Don't do Mackenzie and Crosspost, the prominent genealogist and historian of North Loughs, informed us that he was told that the last service, that is the last burial in Rhanish Cemetery, took place about 1800, and the person was known as the Duke. Probably there was a Duke in Lure, was probably, might have been him. Once again, Chrissy can investigate that. There was a man by the name of Duke at the west end of Lure. I think his name was Morrison. He got his nickname by reason of the fact that he was employed by a Duke at one time. Tainuke, the Duke's house, is still well known in Lure. Miss Mackenzie Crosspost also heard that the Shant Isles polling station was at Rarnish. And that might be worth further research because there is an old pre-Reformation church, that of St. Mary in the Shant Isles, which might have some association with Rarnish ecclesiastical cell. Well, perhaps we could go into that one later on. If indeed it's the second judge that Martin mentions in Locks, it's rather strange that nobody tumbled to it. But as I said before, very little was known about the Rarnish Church. I never heard it be mentioned before until Alistair MacLeod, late councillor in Rarnish, also the elect, told me about it and told to. Now, the next cemetery over there, which is the old disused cemetery above the main road at the west end of Crosspost, Estapar, E-A-S-T-A-P-A-R, quite obviously an Osh name which might mean rich. Well, it is a rich that it is situated on. And then the third cemetery in that area is Tomikalang, Tomic-a-Lang. Well, Langa, the end of that, sounds very Norwegian. That is the area where the new cemetery is, by the shore at the west end of Crosspost. This place name appears to be a combination of Gaelic Norse town, is a Gaelic novel, and Lang could mean long hill in Norse. Incidentally, the first person that was buried in Tomikalang Cemetery was Caleb MacLean, Caleb Ne Lochley, 10 Crosspost, in 1908. He was aged about 26 years. Presumably, Estapar Cemetery was in use up till then. Now, when you were considering these cemeteries, you will remember that that the church came down from Chaws to Crosspost in 1843. So, probably Tomikalang, or even the Rarnish Cemetery might have been in use when the church came down there. I should say Estapar there instead of Tomikalang. Probably Tomikalang was the first cemetery that was used after the church came down there. And then, if the first person that went into Tomikalang was in 1908, there's a period there from 1843 to 1908 when Estapar Cemetery was used, presumably. And these are things that you could ask locally and confirm if there is any further information about that. Rarnish is situated at the head of Lochlemshutter, at the neck of Rurannish, while most of the village is situated on the shores of Lochlemshutter, opposite Grimshutter village. It also extends right across the neck of the peninsula on to the shores of Loch Erisod, at a point called Poldranish, or Polskut, S-K-U-T. Opposite Poldranish, there are a group of islands, interesting islands, called the Birken Islands, offshore at the east end of Crosspost there. And I would have needed to have made more research, but Ilanorissa is one of them. It's a tidal island. Obviously, Norse again means tidal or joy. Orissa means tidal or joined to the mainland at low tide. The sheet passed back and forth from this island. Tanarai is the largest of the Birken Islands. And both sheep and cattle graze there by the crop, cropped ends there. There is an anchorage on the shore side of the island, sheltered by Skeithnahakro. Brisai, another one, is a tidal island of Canho, just opposite the middle of Crossbows, near Swordle, where the first Presbyterian church in Loughs was built in 1724. That church embraced the whole of Loughs. The Swordle church buildings were thatched buildings, and about 1796 a new church building with slated roof was erected at Cowes. The church glebe at Cowes extended to 1,200 acres before it was land raided by landless cottars about 1930. The manse for that church still stands, but the church was demolished when the seaweed factory was built on the site. Incidentally, I have a picture of that church, should you want it, Chrissy, for your thesis. There's a seaweed factory on the site of the church now. Barklin, B-A-J-R-C-L-I-N, in the narrow tidal neck between Rissi and Kilmaver, known as Cools and Nunya, there is a small strip of land on which stands a dune. And my information is that it is in a reasonable state of preservation. That again is something that you could investigate. No doubt there are local folk that are well versed in these things. In the passing, may I mention Yekningilian. Near the Swordle Church at Kilmaver is another feature of the landscape that is vividly remembered in local tradition, Bialadish, because of the abduction of 32 young men who were said to have been tricked into entering the Swordle Church, where servicemen were waiting for them, and they were immediately press-ganged into the Napoleonic Wars about 1808. They were put into boats at Yekningilian, hence the place name, where the boys or the young men were loaded onto boats and were taken out to a waiting warship in the mouth of Loch Ersol. According to local tradition, only 8 of the young men returned. We are unable to identify any descendants of these men. And may I say that happened during the time of Reverend James Simpson in Cowes. He was born in Ferrantosh. That was the minister of Swordle Parish Church at the time. He was there for 41 years until he died in 1830. It is alleged locally that he was implicated in the press ganging of the 32 young men. He was also the writer of the first statistical account for Loughs. When I referred earlier to the statistical account written by Reverend Robert Finlayson, I'm referring to this, to the part of it relative to Loughs. Then Lochanuna. There is yet another dune on the island of this Loch, which is between Ben Oye and Ben Fata, to the east of the Crossbar Stornoway Road B897. Not far from the junction of this side road that goes towards Drimanoish in Varnish. One might need a boat to go out to this island, but there are stepping stones that will enable a person to walk over to the island if the water is low. This stone is also in a reasonable condition, but unauthorized digging has taken place long time ago, and things were removed during this century, according to local information. Well, see if you can find out any more about that. Bathershy. This place name is obviously not Norse. It is a sizable island lying a little to the east of Tanerai Island, and therefore one of the 10 Birken Islands. The crofters graze sheep there, here. To the north of Bathershy is a couple of small islands called Skeiðarnarvík. Obviously so called because corn was grown there. A little to the south of Bathershy is Skeiðheimish, or Seamus's Cleat, that is marked on the map. Skeiðheimish is properly so called because it was from this small island that Sir James Matheson, the Lewis proprietor, got the stones to build the Lewis Castle about 1850. Probably your local people will tell you more about that as well. Further out in the mouth of Loch Erisod lies the cluster of islands called Tavai O, the furthest one out, and then Stakahavai and Tavaivik on the inner side. It was at a cave at Tavaivik that a tragic accident happened on a fine hot summer day in 1849. Three young men, and of course there is controversy about how many there was there, but sometimes say more than three. I think, as far as I can find out, it was three. Went out in a boat on a fishing trip, and they all drowned. Two of them were sons of the popular and highly respected first Crossbar minister, already referred to, Reverend Robert Finlayson, who was a Caithness man. Donald, aged 17, and Robert, aged 14. They are buried at the door of the temple in St. Columb's Island, Loch Erisod, where there is a large flat memorial stone marking their graves. The whole parish of Loch was profoundly affected by this drowning accident, so much so that it is on the lips of the people to this day. Local tradition relates that the accident occurred when the boys took the boat into a small creek known as Gjörnjörgin Books. Apparently the boat had been under sail and the mast was still up. As the tide was coming up, the top of the mast, according to tradition, caught in the rocks off the roof of the creek and gradually forced the boat under the sea as the tide rose. One local account of the event states that the boys relaxed in the boat in the warm sun and dozed off to sleep, quite unaware of what was happening to the boat. The boat and bodies were found in the creek. Local tradition relates that the place named Gjörnjörgin, the Creek of the Books, got its name because of books that was found there. Some say it was books that the young men that were drowned had. Mr. Finlayson preached on the Sabbath as usual, although the funeral had not yet taken place. In response to expressions of condolences, Mr. Finlayson was said to have replied that not only is this hard on flesh and blood, but it's hard on grace itself. Of course, much more than that could be said about place names over there, and I will have to look further at the map, etc. Molchrasovik, for instance, which is the beach at Croft 1 Crosspost at the east end of the township, is a pebbly beach known as by that name. It was at Molchrasovik, obviously a Norwegian name as well, that the first settlers at Crosspost landed in 1843, when they were evicted from Limerick and Oranje. There they constructed improvised tents using the sails of their boats and the timbers from their former homes at Loch Sheld. They also upturned their boats and crawled under them for shelter until they were able to build homes for their families. There was only one house in Crosspost at that time, the Shepherd's House. But that snippet can go under the land chapter. I should certainly obviously mention our Tastinish, because that is a place where the people of South Loch knew very well. It is wrongly marked on the map as Art Hastinish. I don't think that is the correct spelling for that. But then again, you could ask locally what they think of that. It's a well-known feature on the landscape of Crosspost, a promontory which was used as the main landing place of boats. Of course, there were no quays in Crosspost until recently. Indeed, there wasn't, or anywhere else in Loch, until recently. It is at the bottom of the crofts in the middle of the village, or Tastinish. At one time there was also a terminal, that was also a terminal for the postal ferry across Loch Eresort to Cromore, as well as the usual landing place for churchgoers. And the whole of Loch attended the church at Crosspost after the disruption of 1843. Tastinish continued in regular use as a landing place for boat traffic from South Loch until the road round the end of Loch Eresort was completed about 1928. Then again, I'm sure that local people would add a little more to that. I just remembered, and I don't know if I have a note of it anywhere, I just remembered that in conversation with a young man from Cromore at one time, he was saying, and I can't remember too well what he was saying that a Norwegian princess was buried in one of these Birken Islands, or an island thereabout. And if I remember right, I think she was... or he was taken back to Norway. See if there is any word about that. When I see that young man again, I'll ask him what the position is. Or alternatively, I will search to see if I get a note of what he said. You see, that only goes to show that there are all kinds of local history that is lost forever now, just because we don't take the trouble to tell young people the little we know, and perhaps that would enable them to research it and make a note of it. as indeed Chrissy is doing just now, and really she must be encouraged in every way. Another point that occurred to me, and I note it here, perhaps in the wrong place, but otherwise I might forget it. Did you notice the way the crafting villages are sectioned off into areas? The old village in Columbus is sectioned off. You see, craft numbers only came to be used in the 1880s after the First Crafters Act. And before that, crafts were known the same way as indeed farms are known now. They're known by a name. So I'm sure your villages there are, and Ranish in particular, is known. In fact, I do know myself one or two places, features in Ranish. But I dare not go into that just now. But take, for instance, Crossbuster, and I did look more closely at Crossbuster earlier on. Knochasavig, C-R-A-S-A-V-I-G, at Croft 1. Knochgenunn at Croft 2. Knochgenjana at Croft 14. Krikanianel at Croft 18. Knochhemish at Croft 23. Krikanolstavod at 24. Krunkmadi, which is the well-known one, Mary Hill, at the west end of the village. So all these crofts, all these crofting villages are sectioned off into areas like that. It is worth taking a note of them while people still remember them. I have here a sheet or two of paper, which is certainly not mine, but was given to me for a loan. But I think it'd be in order for me to give you some information from it. Sources. Place names of Ross and Cromarty by W.J. Watson. Northern Counties Printing and Publishing, Inverness, 1904. That's Watson. And then the second one, Place Names of Louise and Harris by D. McKeever, Stornoway Gazette Limited, Stornoway, 1934. Steve McKeever. And the third one, Village Names of Louise in the Outer Hebrides by Macne Ofendall, M-A-G-N-E-O-F-T-E-D-A-L, 1954. And he mentions that he looked at several dictionaries, Dwellys and Kachinskalic English dictionaries, etc., and the meanings of some of these. And of course he mentions the O-N as the abbreviation for Old Norse and G as an abbreviation for Gaelic, respectively. Now, I'll give you one or two of these that he has here. Loch Lure, which obviously derives its name from the village, with several interpretations being offered. Watson suggested clay farm or clay steading, the name having O-N elements, L-E-I-R, clay, and bost, farm or stead. McKeever translated as farm of the cliff fall. The U.N. word, J-U-F-R. Go Hanarai. Here it's referred to as the Cove of Tanarai. And perhaps that's a better word for Go than Creek. Leave that to yourself. Dún Varrai, he says, to the south of Rissi lies Dún Barclin, not Dún Varrai, I should say Dún Barclin. Here was once the site of a dune or fort. Captain Thomas, the renowned surveyor and antiquarian, examined this place in the late 19th century. The remains of the dune are still to be seen. Well, that doesn't add too much to what we already knew. The name Bartlin could be derivative of Birlin or Galley, the dune of the Birlin or Galley. I think that should be checked. My friend has perhaps an interesting one here. At the western end of Hashet Rwol, there is Clochan Biro. Clochan, C-L-A-C-H-E-N, Biro. This site testifies, he says, to an ancient past, since its translation would give us Clochan, or stones, and Biro, or standing, or pointed, G. Therefore, we get standing stone. Old map of a word, of the word ruins, marked for the site. Well, again, I think this should, you should check this locally. Clochan is also, as you know, Gaelic name for a village, so there may well have been standing stones there one time. That would be interesting to ask. Concerning Hashet Rwol and Hashet Rwik, he says two prominent hills slightly to the north of the main village reach, or shieling at present, shieling of the big reach and a shieling of the little reach. And also says Dunan, D-U-N-A-N. That is to the southwest of Knocknacarnich Imoda, was once the site of an old dun or fort, now gone. The little dun, Captain Thomas also examined remains of this place in the last century. So it seems that dun is no longer there. Doubtless the local folk will know a little about it. As a matter of interest, my friend, and I cannot vouch for his figures, my friend gives us population figures for some of the Lough's villages. Interesting though, Lewis Bost, he gives in 1830, all these figures were for 1830, he gives us 262 for Lewerbost, 5 in Crossabost. Well, that's before the people came to Crossabost, of course. Rhonish, 232. Grimshatter, 3. Well, that would be before Grimshatter was populated as well. Arnish, 4. Achmore, 54. So that was in 1830. The first census figures were taken in 1841. At that time, Dr. Ruogo on the cross was a retired doctor. He was by name Macaulay of Linshuther, who was a constant thorn in the side of both his subtenants and the estate. Well, of course, we will come to Crossbus in due course and mention that, but the Doctor of War is well known to history. Well, now, Chrissy, there it is. Long-winded, but you might find scraps here and there. I would think that, I personally think that the church at Rhonish and the burial place is most interesting. I personally feel it's the second church in Lochs that Martin was referring to. I think you should look into that very carefully, and if you were able to come to the conclusion and include that in your thesis, I think it would make it very interesting for your professors, etc. Of course, as far as I know, nobody else speculated on that fact. Rather, as I said before, concentrating on the Presbyterian Church at Swarter, near Kilworth. I really don't think that's a second one, which wherever it was. Now, there's a string of dunes and ancient monuments there which indicate that people were living in that area for very early, and the place names, place the Norwegians there, probably somebody before them. So we can work down from that. And I don't think that's too bad for a start for that heading, which is early habitation and place names. For the few inches that left of the tape, I might say that I wrote a leaflet called St. Colum Island, Loch Eirisel. At the time, we were there a year or two ago. There are some people from Rornish with us there. There might be something there of interest. And now, Martin's book I have, and he gives the list of churches at page 106. All over the island. And churches and the saints. So he starts with St. Colum Kill in the island of that name, St. Farrar of Kirriness, St. Lennon of Stornoway. Well, the spellings there are. You see, it could quite easily be wrong with Farrar of Kirriness, because all the other ones are somewhat odd. Stornoway, S-T-E-R. This tape is the private and confidential property of Chrissy McLean, 22, Rannish, Loss, a 21-year-old student at Glasgow University. It is a record of a conversation which she had with Angus MacLeod, a senior citizen from Loss, on 23rd February 1996. It is the first of a series of interviews with local people in her research for material for the thesis she's about to write on the subject of local history. She wishes to speak to as many local people as are willing to cooperate with her, and she believes all elderly people has much to contribute, if only by reason of their age and the fact that they have seen many changes during their lifetime. Also, they will have heard the previous generation discussing many aspects of local history that is in danger of being lost forever. I wish to say that it is a great pleasure for me to talk with Chrissy and any other young person who take an interest in our valuable heritage and history. I do hope she will receive the cooperation of all local people, because I believe all local people has much more to contribute than they themselves believe. The older ladies could tell her about their experiences at the herring fishing in the big houses in Glasgow, etc. Likewise, the older men could tell her about their experience of the herring fishing and American Navy, and perhaps their war experiences. The older folk are also valuable sources of information for place names and many other aspects of our local history. We began our discussion by asking Chrissy what subjects she was particularly interested in. And among the subjects she mentioned was 1, the early history of Loughs; 2, place names; 3, taxmen on the Runrig land tenure; 4, land ownership; 5, crofting and tenure; 6, kelping; 7, fishing; 8, religion; 9, the Gaeilge; 10, social changes we have seen. Before we could stop Chrissy, she had given us the above 10 headings, which makes a comprehensive beginning, and more could be added to the list. Surely, therefore, we can all comment on one or more of these subjects. Before I come to the substance of the discussion, I would like to address a few remarks to Chrissy herself in order to clarify our mutual positions. Both I and anyone else that Chrissy interviews must recognize that Chrissy is the sole arbiter of what she accepts or rejects from the interview she has with us. This is her thesis, and she will write it in her own words. I see my function as trying to stimulate her mind by passing on to her any information I happen to have come upon in my long lifetime. Chrissy is under no obligation to reflect my convictions or my line of thinking in her writing. I will, of course, do my best to quote sources or alternatively indicate that the source is local tradition, be a Waddish. I am not sure if Chrissy made up her mind about the scope or geographical area she wishes to cover with her thesis, but probably the parish of Loughs and Rhonish in particular. To begin with, I suppose we should comment on the first of the 10 points, that is, the early history. Church history and ancient monuments and place names are some sources of early history. The crofting village of Rhonish itself is said to be a very old habitation. And I am not very familiar with the history of this village, but we could offer general comments, which is designed to stimulate Chrissy to fuller research before she writes. I have not studied the very early history of Louis, but I am under the impression that the Picts were here very early, and then the Celts. Some writers maintain that they were both Celts, but I leave these things to Chrissy and I come to St. Columba, who is sometimes known as the Apostle of the Western Highlands. Columbus was born in Ireland in 521 AD. He landed in Iona in 563 at the age of 42 years, where he began his life's work of evangelizing Scotland. In time, his followers penetrated through to St. Colum Island in Lough Erison. I don't think the date is known, but I leave that to Chrissy. It might not be unreasonable to guess that a branch of the Celtic Church functioned in St. Colum Island, Lough Erison, perhaps 1,200 years ago. It is said that the influence of the Celtic Church penetrated to Applecross, on the Manch coast, perhaps about 800 AD, and spread to Louis about the same time. I'll leave it to Chrissy to check on these dates. The ruins of the church and graveyard in St. Colum Island is still to be seen, and we only mention Colum Island here to show that there were people in the area at that distant time. Reverend Robert Finlayson, the author of the second statistical account about 1833, speaks about a ruin of a place of worship in Ellancholum Hill, which was erected, he says, in the days of Mac Meat Verochy, the Seaforth factor. That would be sometime after 1610. Obviously, the good reverend was misinformed here. Probably Mac Meat Verochy repaired the church that was there. Obviously, there was a church there before then. Leaving aside St. Colum Island, Loch Erisord, and touching on place names. As early as 800 AD, the Vikings, who were the ancestors of the modern Norwegians, Swedes and Danes, migrated to the Orkneys, Shetlands and the Hebrides, etc. And for nearly three centuries, the 9th, 10th and 11th, they ravaged the coasts of Europe. 800 years later, that is just now, the prevalence of Norse influence in Louis' place names is quite remarkable. Husbost, Crossbost, ending with Bost, indicating Norse farmsteads. Now, of course, that's what Bost means. Also, Rarnish and Grimshidder. But I'm not going to attempt to translate the meaning of all these names. Nish, N-I-S-H, or Ness, in Rarnish, I'm told means headland in Norse. Hashetarvo and Hashetarvik, being features of the landscape between Crossfoss and Rarnish, are obviously Norse names, as well as Krongeljnish and I am not sure if it's Helgenish they call the old burial ground and an old temple situated on Croft 35 Rarnish, which is above the adjoining crofts at the east end of Crossbost, between Rarnish and Crossbost. I'm told very little of the temple is left now. Probably the stones were used by the crofters to build their homes. Strangely, but there is very little reliable information available about this old temple, and we can only speculate on the basis of the available information. For my own self, I had never heard about this temple or burial ground until recently. Some local people speculate that this ancient temple in Rarnish was dedicated to St. Peter. The circumstantial evidence is that there is a stream nearby towards Grimshidder, which is known as Aldfeddr, St. Peter's stream. Also, there is Adi and Hakkard, the priest's shealing. And the tradition that the priests could fish grey mullet on Loch Orensay, previously known as Loch Behi Peaceful, at one time. There is also a tradition of an orchard in the area. And perhaps Chrissy could investigate more about these things. Martin, the gentleman who wrote the description of the Western Isles in 1695 gave a list of 25 pre-Reformation churches in Louis. He stated that two of these churches were in Lochs, St. Columbkille in the island of that name in Loch Erison, and St. Farrar of Caerness, Pharrear, at Caerness, Caerness. Subsequent writers are puzzled as to the exact location of the second church, and some of them suggest Swordle near Cowes, where the first post-Reformation Presbyterian church was erected in 1724. I venture to say that the case for Swordle is much less convincing than that for the Rhanish site. Now take for instance the old spelling for Rhanish, R-A-E-R-N-I-S-H. And if the first letter R is replaced by K, we have more or less the same spelling as Martin Martin gives for Saint for Saint Farrar, Frere. Also, for the church at Rhetronish, I mean. Also, Saint Farrar is very close to Saint Peter, or Nuf Petter in Gaelic speech. Say Saint Farrar, Petter. The spellings of these two words, Farrar, Saint Farrar, and Nuf Petter, is very close. And I'll leave that again to Chrissy to think about it. Although Mackenzie and Crosbus, the prominent genealogist and historian of North Loughs, informed us that he was told that the last service, that is the last burial in Rhanish Cemetery, took place about 1800, and the person was known as the Duke. Probably there was a Duke in Lourdes, probably it might have been him. Once again, Chrissy can investigate that. There was a man by the name of Duke at the west end of Lourdes. I think his name was Morrison. He got his nickname by reason of the fact that he was employed by a Duke at one time. Tainuke, the Duke's house, is still well known in Lourdes. Mr. Mackenzie Crosspost also heard that the Shant Isles polling station was at Rhanish. And that might be worth further research because there is an old pre-Reformation church, that of St. Mary in the Shant Isles, which might have some association with the Rhanish ecclesiastical cell. Well, perhaps we could go into that one later on. If indeed it's the second church that Martin mentions in Loughs, it's rather strange that nobody tumbled to it. But as I said before, very little was known about the Rhanish church. I never heard it be mentioned before until Alistair MacLeod, the late councillor in Rhanish, also the elect, told me about it, and Paul too. Now, the next cemetery over there, which is the old disused cemetery above the main road at the west end of Crosspost, Estapar, E-A-S-T-A-P-A-R, quite obviously a Norse name which might mean rich. Well, it is a rich that it is situated on. And then the third cemetery in that area is Tomigalang, Tomic-a-Lang. Well, Langa, the end of that, sounds very Norwegian. That is the area where the new cemetery is, by the shore at the west end of Crossings. This place name appears to be a combination of Gaelic Norse town as a Gaelic novel, and Lang could mean long hill in Norse. Incidentally, the first person that was buried in Tumigie Lang Cemetery was Caleb MacLean, Caleb Ne Lochley, 10 Crossobost, in 1908. He was aged about 26 years. Presumably, Estepar Cemetery was in use up till then. Now, when you were considering these cemeteries, you will remember that the church came down from Chaws to Crossobost in 1843. So, probably Tumigie Lang or even the Rani Cemetery might have been in use when the church came down there. I should say Estepar there instead of Tumigie Lang. Probably Tumigie Lang was the first cemetery that was used after the church came down there. And then, if the first person that went into Tumigie Lang was in 1908, there's a period there from 1843 to 1908 when Estepar Cemetery was used, presumably. And these are things that you could ask locally and confirm if there is any further information about that. Ranish is situated at the head of Loch Limshuter, at the neck of Roo Ranish, while most of the village is situated on the shores of Loch Limshuter, opposite Grimshuter village. It also extends right across the neck of the peninsula on to the shores of Loch Erisod, at a point called Poldranish, or Poldskut, S-K-U-T. Opposite Poldranish, there are a group of islands, interesting islands, called the Birken Islands, offshore at the east end of Crossobost there. And I would have needed to have made more research, but Ilanorissa is one of them. It's a tidal island, obviously Norse again, means tidal or joy. Orissa means tidal or joined to the mainland at low tide. The sheep pass back and forth from this island. Tanarai is the largest of the Birken Islands, and both sheep and cattle grazed there by the cropped end there. There is an anchorage on the shore side of the island, sheltered by Skeithnahakro. Rysai, another one, is a tidal island of Kanhor, just opposite the middle of Crossobost, near Swordal, where the first Presbyterian church in Loughs was built in 1724. That church embraced the whole of Loughs. The Swordal church buildings were thatched buildings, and about 1796 a new church building with slated roof was erected at Chaws. The church glebe at Chaws extended to 1,200 acres before it was land raided by landless cottars about 1930. The mats for that church still stands, but the church was demolished when the seaweed factory was built on the site. Incidentally, I have a picture of that church, should you want it, Chrissy, for your thesis. There's a seaweed factory on the site of the church now. Dún Brach Barklin, B-A-J-R-C-A-I-N, in the narrow tidal neck between Rysi and Kilmaver, known as as Kuz and Nunya man. There is a small strip of land on which stands a dune. And my information is that it is in a reasonable state of preservation. That again is something that you could investigate. And no doubt there are local folk that are well versed in these things. In the passing, may I mention Yekningilian. Near the Swordle Church at Kamamur is another feature of the landscape that is vividly remembered in local tradition of Bialadish because of the abduction of 32 young men who were said to have been tricked into entering the Swordle Church, where service men were waiting for them, and they were immediately press-ganged into the Napoleonic Wars about 1808. They were put into boats at Yekningilian, hence the place name, where the boys or the young men were loaded onto boats and were taken out to a waiting warship in the mouth of Loch Erson. According to local tradition, only 8 of the young men returned. We are unable to identify any descendants of these men. And may I say that happened during the time of Reverend James Simpson in Cowes. He was born in Ferrantosh. That was the minister of Swordle Parish Church at the time. He was there for 41 years until he died in 1830. It is alleged locally that he was implicated in the press ganging of the 32 young men. He was also the writer of the first statistical account for loss. When I referred earlier to the statistical account written by Reverend Robert Finlayson, I'm referring to this, to the part of it relative to loss. Then Loch Anuna. There is yet another dune on the island of this loch, which is between Bain Bhuiyu and Bain Fata, to the east of the crossbow stone we wrote B897. Not far from the junction of this side road that goes towards Drimanoish in Rannish. One might need a boat to go out to this island, but there are stepping stones that will enable a person to walk over to the island if the water is low. This dune is also in a reasonable condition, but unauthorized digging has taken place a long time ago, and things were removed during this century, according to local information. Well, see if you can find out any more about that. Battershy. This place name is obviously not Norse. It is a sizable island lying a little to the east of Tanerai Island, and therefore one of the 10 Birken Islands. The crofters graze sheep there, here. To the north of Battershy is a couple of small islands called corn, river. Obviously so called because corn was grown there. A little to the south of Battersby is Skidhamish, or Seamus's Cleet, as it is marked on the map. Skidhamish is properly so called because it was from this small island that Sir James Matheson, the Lewis proprietor, got the stones to build the Lewis Castle about 1850. Probably your local people will tell you more about that as well. Further out in the mouth of Loch Erisod lies the cluster of islands called Tagai U, the furthest one out, and then Staka Hawaii and Tagai Vik on the inner side. It was at a cave at Tagai Vik that a tragic accident happened on a fine hot summer day in 1849. Three young men, and of course there is controversy about how many there was there, but sometimes say more than three. I think, as far as I can find out, it was three. Went out in a boat on a fishing trip, and they all drowned. Two of them were sons of the popular and highly respected first Crossbus minister, already referred to, Reverend Robert Finlayson, who was a Caithness man. Donald, aged 17, and Robert, aged 14. They are buried at the door of the temple in St. Columb's Island, Loch Erisert, where there is a large flat memorial stone marking their graves. The whole parish of Loch was profoundly affected by this drowning accident, so much so that it is on the lips of the people to this day. Local tradition relates that the accident occurred when the boys took the boat into a small creek known as Gjorneljorekin. Apparently, the boat had been under sail and the mast was still up. As the tide was coming up, the top of the mast, according to tradition, caught in the rocks off the roof of the creek, and gradually forced the boat under the sea as the tide rose. One local account of the event states that the boys relaxed in the boat in the warm sun and dozed off to sleep, quite unaware of what was happening to the boat. The boat and bodies were found in the creek. Local tradition relates that the place named Gjorneljorekin, the Creek of the Books, got its name because of books that was found there. Some say it was books that the young men that were drowned had. Mr. Finlayson preached on the Sabbath as usual, although the funeral had not yet taken place. In response to expressions of condolences, Mr. Finlayson was said to have replied that not only is this hard on flesh and blood, but it's hard on grace itself. Of course, much more than that could be said about place names over there. And I will have to look further at the map, etc. Molchrasovik, for instance, which is the beach at Croft 1 Crossbust at the east end of the township, is a pebbly beach known as by that name. It was at Molchrasovik, obviously a Norwegian name as well, that the first settlers at Crossbust landed in 1843. When they were evicted from Limerick and Oranje. There they constructed improvised tents using the sails of their boats and the timbers from their former homes at Loch Shell. They also upturned their boats and crawled under them for shelter until they were able to build homes for their families. There was only one house in Crossbus at that time, the Shepherd's House. But that snippet can go under the land chapter. I should certainly obviously mention our Tastinish, because is a place where the people of South Loch you knew very well. It is wrongly marked on the map as Art Hastings. I don't think that is the correct spelling for that. But then again, you could ask locally what they think of that. It's a well-known feature on the landscape of Crossford, a promontory which was used as the main landing place of boats. Of course, there were no quays in Crossford until recently. Indeed, there wasn't, or anywhere else in Ross until recently. It is at the bottom of the crofts in the middle of the village, or Tatchish. At one time, there was also a terminal. That was also a terminal for the postal ferry across Loch Erisor to Cromore, as well as the usual landing place for churchgoers. And the whole of Loch attended the church at Crossfest after the disruption of 1843. Artachinish continued in regular use as a landing place for boat traffic from South Loch until the road round the end of Loch Erisor was completed about 1928. Then again, I'm sure that local people would add a little more to that. I just remembered, and I don't know if I have a note of it anywhere, I just remembered that in conversation with a young man from Cromore at one time, he was saying, and I can't remember too well what he was saying, that a Norwegian princess was buried in one of these Birken Islands, or an island thereabout. And if I remember right, I think she was, was taken back to Norway. See if there is any word about that. When I see that young man again, I'll ask him what the position is. Or alternatively, I will search to see if I made a note of what he said. You see, that only goes to show that there are all kinds of local history that is lost forever now, just because we don't take the trouble to tell young people the little we know. And perhaps that would enable them to research it and make a note of it, as indeed Chrissy is doing just now. And really, she must be encouraged in every way. Another point that occurred to me, and I noted here, perhaps in the wrong place, but otherwise I might forget it. Did you notice the way the crofting villages are sectioned off into areas? The old village in Columbus is sectioned off. You see, croft numbers only came to be used in the 1880s after the First Crofters Act. And before that, crofts were known the same way as indeed farms are known now. They're known by a name. So I'm sure your villages there are, and Ranish in particular, is known. In fact, I do know myself one or two places. Features in Varnish, but I dare not go into that just now. But take, for instance, Crossbost, and I did look more closely at Crossbost earlier on. Knochasavig, C-R-A-S-A-V-I-G, at Croft 1, Knochanunya at Croft 2, Knochanyana at Croft 14, Krikanianel at Croft 18, Knoch Hamish at Croft 23, Krikanolstavod at 24, Knoch Madi, which is the well known one, Mary Hill, at the west end of the village. So all these crofts, all these crofting villages are sectioned off into areas like that. It is worth taking a note of them while people still remember them. I have here a sheet or two of paper, which is certainly not mine, but was given to me for a loan. But I think it'd be in order for me to give you some information from it. Sources. Place names of Ross and Cromedy by W.J. Watson. Northern Counties Printing and Publishing, Inverness, 1904. That's Watson. And then the second one, Place Names of Lewis and Harris by D. McKeever, Stornoway Gazette Limited, Stornoway, 1934. That's D. McKeever. And the third one, Village Names of Lewis in the Outer Hebrides by Macne Offendall, M-A-G-N-E-O-F-T-E-D-A-L, 1954. And he mentions that he looked at several dictionaries, Dwellys, and McCarran's Gaelic English dictionaries, etc., for the meanings of some of these. And of course he mentions the O-N as the abbreviation for Old Norse, and G as an abbreviation for Gaelic, respectively. Now, I'll give you one or two of these that he has here. Loch Lure, which obviously derives its name from the village, with several interpretations being offered. Watson suggested Clay Farm, or Clay Steading, the name having O-N elements, L-E-I-R, Clay, and Bost, Farm, or Stead. McKeever translated as Farm of the Cliff Fall, from the O-N word, Chiel, J-U-F. Go Hanarai. Here it's referred to as the Cove of Tanarai. And perhaps that's a better word for Go than Creek. Leave that to yourself. Dún Varrai. He says, to the south of Rissi lies Dún Barclan. Not Dún Varrai. I should say Dún Barclan. Here was once the site of a dune or fort. Captain Thomas, the renowned surveyor and antiquarian, examined this place in the late 19th century. The remains of the dune are still to be seen. Well, that doesn't add too much to what we already know. The name Bartlin could be derivative of Birlin or Galley, the dune of the Birlin or Galley. I think that should be checked. My friend has perhaps an interesting one here. At the western end of Hashet Rwol, there is Clochan Biro. Clochan, C-L-A-C-H-E-N, Biro. This site testifies, he says, to an ancient past, since its translation would give us Clochan, or stones, and biroch, or standing, or pointed, G. Therefore, we get standing stone. Old map of a word, of the word ruins, marked for the site. Well, again, I think this should, I think you should check this locally. Clochan is also, as you know, Gaelic name for a village, so there may well have been standing stones there one time. That would be interesting to ask. Concerning Hashet Rwol and Hashet Rwic, he says two prominent hills slightly to the north of the main village reach, or shealing at present, shealing of the big reach and a shealing of the little reach. And also says Dunan, D-U-N-A-N. That is to the southwest of Knock Carnegie Mulder was once the site of an old dun or fort, now gone. The little dun Captain Thomas also examined remains of this place in the last century. So it seems that dun is no longer there. Doubtless the local folk will know a little about it. As a matter of interest, my friend, and I cannot vouch for his figures, my friend gives us population figures for some of the lost villages. Interesting though, Lewis Bost, he gives in 1830, all these figures were for 1830, he gives us 262 for Lewis Bost, 5 in Crossabost. Well, that's before the people came to Crossabost, of course. Ronish, 232. Grimshatter, 3. Well, that would be before Grimshatter was populated as well. Arnish, 4. Achmoor, 54. So that was in 1830. The first census figures were taken in 1841. At that time, Shannock the Rogue on the cross was a right-haired doctor. He was by name Macaulay of Linshutter, who was a constant thorn in the side of both his subtenants and the estate. Well, of course, we will come to a cross in due course and mention that, but the Doctor of War is well known to history. Well, now, Chrissy, there it is. Long-winded, but you might find scraps here and there. I would think that, I personally think that the church at Ronish and the burial place is most interesting. I personally feel it's the second church in Lochs that Martin was referring to. I think you should look into that very carefully, and if you were able to come to the conclusion and include that in your thesis, I think it would make it very interesting for your professor, etc. Of course, as far as I know, nobody else speculated on that fact. Rather, as I said before, concentrating on the Presbyterian Church at Swarter, near Kilworth. I really don't think that is the second one, which wherever it was. Now, there's a string of dunes and ancient monuments there which indicate that people were living in that area for very early. And the place names, place the Norwegians there, probably somebody before them. So we can work down from that. And I think I don't think that's too bad for a start for that heading, which is early habitation and place names. For the few inches that left of the tape, I might say that I wrote a leaflet called St. Colum Island, Loch Earrisel. At the time, we were there a year or two ago. There are some people from Ronish with us there. There might be something there of interest. And now, Martin Martin's book I have, and he gives the list of churches at page 106. All over the island. And and the saints. So he starts with St. Columbkill in the island of that name, St. Farrar of Kirkenes, St. Lennon of Stornoway. Well, the spellings there are, you see, it could quite easily be wrong with Farrar of Kirkenes, because all the other ones are somewhat odd. Stornoway, S-T-E-R.